In New York City is a camera store. Well, it began as a camera store, but today they sell cameras, electronics, computers and peripherals, all kinds of stuff. And it's one of the largest electronic stores in the world. And as far as camera stores go, I think it's second only to a store in Tokyo, Japan. And online, all right, they go head to head with the likes of Amazon and Newegg and Best Buy when it comes to sales. Now, a few years ago, I was wanting to do some shopping. This was like on Black Friday. And I had gotten on the computer because B&H Photo had advertised some really good Thanksgiving sales. And I got online and their website was shut down. Their store was closed. And it announced right there on the page that they were closed in observance of the Sabbath. You see, the owners of B&H Photo are Orthodox Jews, and so they are observant of the Sabbath day. And not only do they close on the Sabbath, but they close on several other major Jewish holidays throughout the year. Now, the way the Jewish day, the Jewish calendar works, that meant that they closed on Black Friday at 6 p.m. and then didn't open again until 6 p.m. on Saturday. It's one of the biggest shopping days of the year, but they closed down. And they do this all the time. And yet they're able to go head to head against the other big boys in that business. Now, in an interview, the owner of B&H Photo was being asked about this. Why do you close on these days? And he answered, "We answer to a higher authority." Yet despite being closed on these big sales days, B&H Photo is able to generate a lot of sales. And if you study the Sabbath throughout the Old Testament, you see this theme that where God seems to be telling Israel, you remember the Sabbath, you keep it holy, and you rest on the seventh day, and I will bless you. And I will make sure that you accomplish more, that you produce more, that you have more in 6 days worth of work than what everybody else does in seven. This is seen like with the manna that God sends them, the food that he gives Israel during their wandering in the wilderness. And he tells them, you're not to go out and gather any on the seventh day. Instead, on the sixth day, I'll send extra and you'll have enough. And sure enough, that's what God did. Now, fast forward the calendar 3,000-4,000 years, and today we're constantly trying to squeeze 8 days worth of stuff into a 7-day week. And the idea that we could just take one of those days off the schedule and do no work, don't do anything, you know, productive, sounds anathema to the American way of life and our way of thinking. American life is filled with hurry, scurry, and worry. We are always on the go. We have places to be, people to see, things to do, and never enough time to do it in. Our agendas are crammed, our calendars crowded, and our nerves are frazzled. And it's a ruthless way to live, but I tell you, many of us feel constantly driven to excel, driven to accomplish, driven to perform, all right? We live on a treadmill that's set like two notches higher than we can keep pace with, all right? Drivenness, it doesn't let up. It knows no end. Let me tell you, this can be a real struggle for men. Because for so many men, our identity is tied up in our work. I mean, two guys meet each other for the first time, and like the first question, what do you do for a living? All right. What we do is who we are. And many of us were raised with this idea. You are what you accomplish. Right. So if we're not working harder, working more, working later, we feel less than, this can also be a real struggle for women, right? Because you've been told you can be superwoman, right? You can have a successful career. You can be a great mom. You can be a smoking hot wife, right? You should be able to do it all and do it perfectly. And the clock just turns way too fast for us to do it all, right? And we forget that we are human beings, not human doings. And then we lie to ourselves, right? We pretend that there is an end in sight. Right? If I can do just a little bit more, just a little bit longer, right? If I can just get things caught up and get back on schedule, just a little bit more, you know, then I'll get that promotion and I can slow down, right? We tell ourselves, well, when I can get all the kids out of diapers, right? Or when all the kids are in school, or once they all graduate, and then it's when they're all out of the house, but it never ends, right? That slowdown that we tell ourselves is coming is like that mirage of water on a hot summer highway. It never gets any closer. It stays off there in the distance. Well, God provided the answer to this treadmill of hurry, scurry, and worry more than 4,000 years ago. In fact, it's much older than that. But in the fourth commandment, there is a timeless principle that's as old as creation itself, and it acts like a reset button for our crammed calendars, our commanding clocks, and our taskmaster to-do lists. And here's what we read in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 10. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. I mean, set apart. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. You can't pass the responsibility on to someone else. And what God is saying here is, don't let time be your God. I am your God. Entrust your time to the one who is over time, who created time, who knows not only the past, but the future, for whom one day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years are like a day. Take time to be with the one who will one day say, time's up, on time. And all of history will come to a just conclusion at the foot of his throne. Take a break from time and the wearisome earthly labors and enjoy a time of rest and the love of your heavenly Father and enjoy his many good gifts. Now, to remind the children of Israel of the importance of this, he gives them what is called the Sabbath. Now, the Hebrew word Shabbat, it comes from a word meaning to stop, to cease what you are doing, take a break. And Sabbath contains this idea. It carried the promise of rest. And when God says stop, rest, just what is it we are resting from? Well, verse 9 uses two different words. They're translated as labor and work. Now, this refers both to the work that we do and the physical effects it has on us, right? It makes us tired. It wears us out, right? And you know what that's like, don't you? Your muscles feel like jelly. Oh, your back is sore. Your head aches, right? And your emotional battery is just completely drained, right? One more whiny kid, one more clueless coworker, and you're going to lose it. Your brain cannot process one more thing. And when this happens day after day, week after week, year after year, it's no wonder we have little left to give to our families and to give to God. And for this reason, God gives Israel the Sabbath, and he tells them, remember the Sabbath. Right? And remember means more than just a casual acknowledgement, more than just a little note on the calendar. To remember required action. All right. This word used for remember was an action word. To remember was to do something about it. The Sabbath was never to be an empty ritual, but a time of rest, of renewal, and rejuvenation. Now, the fourth commandment is unique in several different ways. First, along with the fifth commandment, they're the only commandments that are stated as a positive. Right? All of the other commandments are, you shall not. But the fourth and fifth commandments are, you shall. You shall remember the Sabbath. All right. The emphasis is not on the not working, but it's on the remembering part. Remember to stop. Remember to rest. Remember me, God says. Second, this might come as a surprise. It's the longest of the 10, right? Many Christians see this as like the least important of the 10 commandments. It's probably the most ignored commandment, especially by Christians. But just in the sheer number of words that God uses, it's obvious that he thinks it's important. It's like 30% of the text. Now, maybe the reason that we tend to neglect the importance of this commandment is the third thing that makes it unique. It's the only commandment that is not restated in some way in the New Testament, right? All of the other commandments are in some way reiterated in the New Covenant, but this one is not. In fact, in Romans 14, Paul says that whether you think that one day is more special than all the others, like the Sabbath, or you think that all days are equal in value, that you should be convinced in your own mind that you should do so unto the Lord and also give others the freedom to do the same. So you can have your personal conviction on this, but not everybody's going to see it the same. So as new covenant Christians, what are we to do with this idea of the Sabbath? So let's start with the new covenant and work our way back. God, in his sovereign wisdom, chose not to have us as New Testament believers keep the Sabbath, a specific day, as a formal observance. All right, so nowhere in the New Testament are we instructed to observe Saturday or any specific day as a Sabbath. Now, the New Testament does talk about Sabbath. It talks about a Sabbath, a rest awaiting us in heaven. And this is a time of eternal rest and refreshing from our wearisome time on earth. Hebrews 4:9 says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God did from his. But he's talking there about heaven and eternity. Now, historically, as we all know, the church has celebrated the first day of the week, right? From the earliest days of the church in the book of Acts, the followers of Christ came together for fellowship, for prayer, for the Lord's Supper, and for the teaching of the word. And this is something they did often multiple days a week, you know, meeting daily, but they were also sure to do it on the first day of the week, on Sunday. We see this in Acts chapter 20, verse 7, where it says, on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Later, Paul would write to the Corinthian church about a special offering. On the first day of the week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. And he says this because the first day of the week is the day they all came together for worship. Now, by the time that John receives his vision of Revelation and he writes the last book of the New Testament, the first day of the week is simply known, as John calls it, the Lord's Day, right? So if you're amongst Christians in the late first century and you say, hey, on the Lord's Day, everybody knows you're talking about Sunday. Now, the early Christians, they picked Sunday for good reason, right? The resurrection of Jesus happened when? On the first day of the week. Not only that, but the day of Pentecost, all right? The day that God poured out the Holy Spirit on the disciples and the day the church was born, that was on a Sunday. But nowhere in the New Testament are we told that Sunday is equal to the Sabbath or that Sunday has replaced the Sabbath. Now, certainly we are called to meet together, to worship, to pray, to take the Lord's Supper, to teach and to learn. But nowhere are we told that Sunday is to be observed as a formal Sabbath. In fact, if you think about it, it would have been impossible for most of those early believers. We know from history, for instance, that the vast majority of the early Christians were the poorest of the poor. They were day laborers. They were slaves. They were servants. They would have been required to work on Sunday. This is why so often in the early church, we find them assembling either very early in the morning or late in the night. You might remember a fellow by the name of Eutychus who was listening to Paul speak, and he was sitting in a window, and it got to be late. I mean, Paul kept preaching till midnight, and Eutychus falls asleep, and he falls out the window. Right? There's a reason, a good reason, why they were meeting so late. Now, unfortunately, many Christians kind of stop here in their consideration and their analysis of the Sabbath. But I tell you, if we do that, then we miss the heart of this commandment. And I think we miss a tremendous grace of God. Because when we peel back the legal requirements of the fourth commandment, I think we find a timeless principle that is as relevant to our lives today as it ever was. And this timeless truth is this, that we need regular and consistent periods of rest and refreshing. And this isn't something based on the Old Testament Mosaic law, but it is rooted in creation itself. In fact, the fourth commandment points us back to creation. Verse 11 says, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy." Now, if you go back and read the Genesis account, you'll find that those words are taken almost directly out of the creation story. Now, God created the Sabbath long before the law, right? He wove it into creation. And you can see it. There are cycles of seasons, periods of blossom and growth, followed by a time of dormancy. There is day and night, and creatures seem to know by instinct when to hunt and to breed and when to sleep and hibernate. And if you look through all of nature, you see these circadian rhythms and these biorhythms, and they're woven throughout creation. And then God models this himself when he takes a rest on the seventh day. Now, why did God rest? Was God tired? Was the Almighty pooped? No, certainly not. And he is all powerful. His strength is infinite. He created the universe with just the mention of his word. Right? God didn't need to take a break. God didn't rest for his sake. He rested for our sake. He was setting a pattern for nature. He was modeling an example for us to follow. Right? The 7-day cycles that we follow, that's not something that we made up. It's built into creation. And a part of this design is that you and I, everyone, needs regular times of rest and renewal. Jesus even practiced this, even though he was the Son of God. The Gospels tell us that he would often withdraw to a lonely place. He needed renewal. And it's interesting because outside of the Bible, science has found that we are happier, that we are healthier, and that we are even more productive when we truly rest from our labors one day a week, right? So a well-rested person that works 6 days can accomplish more than an overworked person who works 7 days. Maybe God knew what he was talking about. However, when we continue without a break, without a rest, we pay a steep price physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So while it's true that the New Testament doesn't assign a specific day where we are required to observe, I think God still invites us to times of rest and renewal. But he also gives us the freedom to choose when and where and how. But still, he calls us to times of refreshing. And so I want to give you four benefits to Sabbath keeping. All right, this answers the why question. Number one, it guards against materialism. Right? We fight the constant temptation to get just a little bit more. Right? And we find ourselves working long hours, sacrificing faith, sacrificing family, right? Just so we can have a bigger house, a nicer car, just to have a little bit more. Right? If I just put in a few more hours, we can afford to get that car, go on that vacation, add that room, and we work just a little bit more so that we can add to our collection of earthly trinkets. Now, we are to work for our needs. Right? I mean, we can even work for our wants. In fact, the Bible says we are to work hard. The Bible teaches a very strong work ethic. Work can be and should be a holy thing. It's a calling. But never is our work to become an idol or to serve another idol. Right? When work becomes an idol or serves an idol, that's when, all right, we become a workaholic. Work no longer serves us, but we serve it. And our self-worth and our identity no longer come from God, but are rooted in our work, in our achievement, in our income. And so we must always be busy. We work over breakfast, we work over lunch, and often over supper. And now we've got phones that are always with us, and they are always on, and our work can always find us no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. We work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. We work 2 and 3 jobs, and the motto, anywhere and anytime, anywhere, becomes every time, everywhere. In reality, our work should further God's purpose in our lives and bring him glory, not serve the false gods of wealth and possessions, accomplishment. Regular Sabbath rest keeps these idols toppled, and it guards our hearts against materialism. Number two, Sabbath gives us time to enjoy God's creation, all right? It's a chance to enjoy life filled with the good gifts of God. Now, I'm about to say something that might be a new concept to you, but a part of understanding the Sabbath is having a good theology of play. Yes, I said a theology of play. Now, think about what play is. Right? Play is when you do something simply because it brings you joy and delight. I mean, think of little kids, you know, giggling and having a good time, all right? They're filled with delight and joy, and that's why they're doing it. Well, there's a German theologian by the name of Jürgen Moltmann, and he asked a very interesting question. Why? Why did God create the universe if he is a free and all-sufficient being? He didn't need the world. Right? Well, part of the answer he draws from Proverbs. Creation is God at play. God created the world in part because it brought God joy and delight to create the world and put us in it. In Proverbs 8, it's a poem which personifies wisdom, as if wisdom was a created being. And it talks about how wisdom was born at the very beginning when the world came to be. Verse 23 in Proverbs 8. And wisdom was at God's side when he made the world. And listen to what wisdom says in Proverbs 8, 30 through 31. Then I was constantly at his side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world, and delighting in mankind. It sounds like a child at play, doesn't it? God even included the angels in his joyous sandbox of creation. Job 38:7 says this about creation. It says, the morning stars, right? And that's not talking about stars and lights. That's talking about high-ranking spiritual beings. Think of seraphim and cherubim, that sort of thing. The morning stars sang together, and all the angels shouted for joy. And we are creatures uniquely made in the image of God. All right? No other animal, no other creature made in God's image except for humanity. And we're made in the image of God. And so Sabbath rest gives us the opportunity to join with our Creator in delighting, in joy. Delighting in the beauty, the wonder, the extravagance, and the glory of his creation. And the fact that God rested, it tells us that we don't always have to be doing something useful, right? We don't always have to be getting something done, all right? What are you doing? Nothing. That can be a holy thing. God invites us. He invites you to play with him. Whether it's a day on the water or a hike in the woods or a spirited game with your friends or taking a ride through the countryside, sometimes the holiest thing you can do is delight in the life that God has given. Thirdly, Sabbath creates time for us to enjoy God. The Sabbath, though it may be, in part, a day of relaxation and play, it's more than just a day off. It's a time to enjoy God. Exodus 31:13 says that one of the purposes of the Sabbath was, quote, so that you may know I am the Lord. Right? He wanted them to take time to think about God. Leviticus 23:3 said, call it a day of, quote unquote, sacred assembly. Isaiah 58, 13 and 14 encourage the Israelites to delight in the Sabbath so they will find their joy in the Lord. So it's obvious from these passages and others that one of God's purposes of the Sabbath is not just physical refreshing or emotional refreshing, but spiritual refreshing. Now, a final why of the Sabbath is that it teaches us to trust God. All right, when we hurry, scurry, and worry our way through life at a workaholic pace, we're betraying a lack of trust in God. We're saying that I don't think God can really carry me through. I have to do it myself. I got to do it by my own strength. But when we stop, when we cease and take a break, a Sabbath from our earthly work, then we declare in faith, you know what? God is in control. God's got this, and he will provide for my needs according to his riches in glory. So Sabbath is a reset button every week that allows us to get back on his schedule. Look, think about it this way. Sabbath enables us to trust God with our time. All right, just like giving and tithes and offerings teach us to trust him with our money, Sabbath teaches us to trust him with our time. Now, before I wrap this up, let me give you three steps for creating Sabbath in your life. And I'm calling this three steps, but don't be misled, because this isn't easy. It's a journey. And it can be a difficult journey. And I have to confess, it's a journey I'm still on. I'm still learning. I'm still discovering. I haven't got this all figured out. But if you're a workaholic and you have those tendencies, practicing Sabbath can be terrifying. Because doing nothing, it makes us feel vulnerable. Because overworking allows us to hide our feelings of inadequacy, not just from others, but from ourselves. Because we feel like we have to be good enough. But Sabbath helps us to see that God is enough. And so take a step, begin your journey, and keep going. So step number one, free your time. Free your time. Make space for your Sabbath, right? Because your schedule, your deadlines and to-do lists will never stop themselves and then give you the time you need, right? You have to stop. So pick a day. Now, it doesn't have to be Saturday. It can be any day. And it doesn't even have to be midnight to midnight. In the first century, the day began at 6 p.m. in the evening. All right. And so maybe that works for you. Now, if you absolutely believe that there is no way that you can possibly stop for a 24-hour period, then start with half a day. But start somewhere and block off that section of time. Free your time. Embrace your limits. Discard the illusion that you're indispensable to the running of this world or even the running of your business or organization or whatever it might be. Recognize that we will never finish all of our goals and all of our projects, but God is still on the throne and he still has things well in hand. So free your time. And then let those who need to know that, hey, that time is not available to them. Right? Now, be conscientious. Don't be rude. Explain what you need to. And also, let me say this. This doesn't mean that you block out your wife or your family. Right? Maybe this is something that you need to communicate with them. You do it together. You share the Sabbath together. But number one, free your time. Number two, find your delights. Right? God delighted in creation. He called it very good. So make a list of the people and the activities that bring you delight. Then, in the time that you have freed, enjoy those people, enjoy those activities, and say no to everything else. Now, this is where we can avoid the legalism of the Pharisees, who made extensive lists of what counted as work and what didn't. And then they spent the rest of their time finding loopholes. Well, this isn't about, well, it's the Sabbath day, so you can't go to the store. It's the Sabbath day, so you can't mow the lawn. Right? If those things bring you delight, well, then do them. If they don't, then don't do them. Right? You see, for one person, mowing the lawn might be a relaxing, enjoyable activity in the outdoors. For another person, they dread it. It's just one more job that has to get done every week. All right, so my Sabbath rest will look different from your Sabbath rest, which will look different from somebody else's. Let me put it this way. Do the things that recharge your batteries and avoid everything that drains them. The world will not end because you put one of those things off for a day. Right? You need this. And God wants you to have this. So what's on your list? Right? Taking a hike, curling up with a good book, maybe hitting your favorite fishing hole, hitting the links, sharing a cup of coffee with a good friend, or spending some time in the shop making something with your hands. Find your delights, delight in those things, thank God for those things, celebrate those things, find your delights. Number three, focus your thoughts. Focus your thoughts. Now, this is just my way of saying, spend some time contemplating and meditating on God. Because like I said, Sabbath is more than just a day off. Worship, prayer, scripture are indispensable parts of a good, refreshing Sabbath. For this reason, it makes sense for many Christians to include Sunday mornings as a part of their Sabbath, not out of requirement, but out of practicality. I was talking to one guy who practices Sabbath from noon on Saturday to noon on Sunday. So whatever chores and household projects he's got to do, he gets those done either Saturday morning or Sunday afternoon. But Saturday afternoons and evenings are focused on delight, and Sunday mornings are focused on God. Now, we had just barely scratched the surface on this, and it's a very important issue, but I need to wrap this up. So let me wrap it up by saying this. Sabbath rest is a core habit of spiritual formation. It is an essential spiritual discipline. And we know that things like Bible reading and prayer and worship are important. Well, so is this. Now, we're not saved by reading the Bible. We're not saved by prayer. We're not saved by worship. And neither are we saved by Sabbath delight. We're saved by Jesus alone. But if we aren't doing these things, we won't be as close to Jesus. We won't be growing in Jesus. We won't be enjoying Jesus like we should, and we won't be becoming more like Jesus. A Sabbath lifestyle is a celebration that God's rest can free us from the cacophony of our own busyness. And I'll leave you with a quote from Peter Scazzaro. He has written a book called The Emotionally Healthy Leader. And here he writes this. He says, on Sabbath, we practice eternity in time. We look forward to that day at the end of our earthly lives when we will perfectly stop, rest, delight, and contemplate the glory of God. Thank you, and God bless.